So we'll finish up here on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis in order to start the Mishnah. The Gemara wants to know, in a case where the Baal Din was Makabel, he accepted upon himself a Karav Apostle, he accepted, let's say, Neman Alai Abba, Neman Alai Avicha, can he be Chozerbo, can he rescind his commitment or not? And the Mishnah recorded a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says, Yochel Achzerbo, he can rescind his commitment. Chacham Omrim, Eino Yochel Achzerbo. That's an absolute commitment, and he can't go back on it. And the Gemara now has an Iboiluhu. So if you take a look, it's about, I would say, 12 lines, 10 lines down from the top. The first word in the lines are, first word is Gemara, Gemara Din. And the Gemara says, Iboiluhu. The Gemara raises the following suffix. Do you have it? Chav Dalet Amud Beis. And the first word is in the line, it's about 12 lines down from the top, is Gemara Din.
From the top.
Down from the top. Iboiluhu, the Gemara raises the following suffix. Li achar Gemara Din machlokes? Is the machlokes, in other words, when did the Chachomim object to Rabbi Meir's position and they insist that the Baal Din has made a commitment that's irreversible? That's only because it's after the Gemar Din, the verdict has been handed down. Aval ifnei Gemar Din, if the Dinu Dvarim, if Beis Din is still deliberating and they haven't yet handed down their final verdict, Divrei HaKol, even the Rabbanan agree, Yochel Lachzerbo, The Baal Din has a right to retract his statement. O Dilma, shall we say, Bein Bazu Machlokes, that the Chachamim hold that once he made his commitment, he cannot reverse his decision. He's accepted a Posel as a Dayan, and even though we're not up to Gemar Din yet, we're still way at the beginning of the Din, it doesn't matter. So then there's a double machlokas. The machlokas applies whether or not we've achieved Gemar Din or even lifnei Gemar Din. Toshma, let's bring a proof from Rava. The Amar Rava, Kibel Olav Karov Apostle, lifnei Gemar Din, Yochel Lachzer Bo. Li'achar Gemar Din, Ein Yochel Lachzer Bo. Now let's assume for the time being that Rava paskins like the Chachamim, because usually Yochid v'Rab Malocha Kirab, and yet Rava is adding a restriction here, and he's saying that only Liachar Gemar Din Eino Yochel Lachzer Bo, but Lifnei Gemar Din Yochel Lachzer Bo. If we understand that the Rabbanan would agree, that was one side in the Gemara Safek, that if we haven't yet gotten to the final verdict, he does have the right, the litigant, to reverse his decision, then everything works out well. Rava diomar kirav Yochanan valiba de Rabbanan. Rava accepts the interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan in the Shita of the Chachamim, and he accepts lahalacha the Chachamim against Rabbi Meir. In other words, since Rabbi Yochanan interpreted that the machlokis here is talking about a case where it's after Gemar Din, but implying that before Gemar Din even the Rabbanan agree that he could be Chozer Bo, then Rava's statement makes sense. The Chachamim went as far in their argument against Rabbi Meir to say that even before Gemar Din, there's no possibility of Chazora. Then Rava di Omar Keman. Rava comes out according to nobody. Right? In other words, both Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in the sugi that we learned yesterday, they both agree that the Chachamim hold that even before the Gemar Din, he cannot be Chozer Bo. Elav shmamino liachar gvar din machlokes shmamino. Sholach le Rav Nachman bar Rav Chizda le Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So there was a question that Rav Nachman sent to Rav Chizda. Yilam deina rabbeinu lifnei gmar din machlokes o liachar gmar din machlokes. This very issue that we've been dealing with. Do the Chacham go as far as to say that even before gmar din he cannot rescind his commitment? And not only that, halacha kedivrei mi, who do we paskin like? Apparently there was a movement to agree with the logic of Rabbi Meir. Yisholach lei, Rav Nachman responded, li achar gmar din machlokes v'halacha kedivrei chachamim. Meaning the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Meir that before the final verdict has been handed down, he can rescind his commitment. But we paskin like the Chachamim that once the Gemar Din has already been established, then the Chacham are right and there's no Chazorah. Rav Ashi had a slightly different tradition. Hachi Sholachli, this was the question of Nachman that Rav Nachman asked, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chizda asked Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, be etein lecho machlokes o b'mocha lecho machlokes. When the Chachamim say that you cannot reverse your commitment, did they go far as to say that even where he said only etein lecho, I'll give you, he didn't use a language of mechila, this was a suffix in the Gemara above, v'alocha kedivrei mi, and how do we paskin lei? Sholach lei, be etin l'cha machlokes, v'alocha kedivrei chachamim. The chacham went as far as to say that even if he didn't explicitly formulate a mechila, he mentions only etin l'cha, that's enough to clinch his commitment in such a way that it's not reversible, and we paskin like the chacham. And that's the way the tradition was handed down Besura, which is a particular area of Bavel, Masli Hocha. But Pumpadis, in another area, another city of Bavel, Masli Hocha, they had a different version. Omar Avchanina Bar Shalmiya, Sholchule Mibay Rav Lishmuel, Yamdein Rabbeinu Lifnei, Gmardin Vekonomi Odomai. The question that was asked was, if it's before Gmardin, and the Chachamim would hold that before Gmar Din there is a possibility of Chazora, and the whole Machlokas is only Liachar Gmar Din, which if you remember was the final Maskana that the Gemara mentioned before. So the Chachamim in principle agree that before Gmar Din he can be Chozer. But what happens if Kanu Miyado, if they made a Kinyan Sudar, which is a kind of kinyan that clinches any hischaivus, anytime I commit myself to something and I do a kinyan sudar, and that's a symbolic act that clinches my gemiras das, then even though it's before gemar din, there's no chazara, sholach lo ein liachar kinyan klu. In other words, once the kinyan was made, a kinyan sudar, that's an absolute commitment, and there's no chazara. Now, Rabosa, we start the new Mishnah. This Mishnah is, in a sense, an extension of the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, we spoke about Psulei Dayonus, meaning a father is a Korov, and therefore he cannot be eligible for Dayonus. And now the Mishnah wants to know, are there any other categories where a person is possible for Dayonus? And the answer is that if he is in violation of an Avera, that itself gives him a din of a Rasha. And the Torah says that a Rasha is posel. Now, keep in mind, the Torah only mentions that in the context of Eidus, but the halach of Eidus applies to Dayonis as well. In other words, he who is disqualified as a witness is also disqualified as a judge. The Eluhain Hapsulim. Here's a list. We're going to soon see it's not an exhaustive list of those who are disqualified as Edim or Dayanim. A Masachik Bekubia means they used to cut small pieces of wood and those pieces of wood were used sort of like what we would call today as dice, and they would gamble with them. Now, in such a case, we have a sugya, which we're going to get to here, called asmachta. Asmachta means when a person makes a flimsy kind of decision to commit himself to pay money. So when I sit down and play and gamble with you, bekubya, I say to you and you say to me that if I lose, I'll pay you. If you lose, you pay me. But really, neither of us expect to lose. Why don't we expect to lose? L'chora, the whole thing depends upon luck. So there's a 50% chance you'll win, 50% chance you'll lose. So you made a commitment to pay. But the answer is that people think that they know better than the other one how to gamble. You know, they keep their cards close, or they read the other person's eyes. I don't know, they read their moves. And therefore, he expects to win. He doesn't expect to lose. He never had a gemiras das. He never had a full decision that he will lose. And therefore, when he pays the other person who won the game, that's gezel. Now, before we move from the spot, I want to point out to you that this Tosus here is very important. V'elu heim ha-psulim. And Tosus is of the opinion that all the psulim that are mentioned in our Mishnah are psulim derabanan, and not psulim d'orais, which means that the violation is only derabanan. On a d'oraisa level, after this game is played, Reuven lost to Shimon, he gave his money to Shimon. There was not a d'oraisa violation of gzela because Shimon didn't steal something from Reuven. Reuven gave it to him. And Tosus says that that is true for everything in this Mishnah. This is the last thing that we mentioned yesterday in the Shia, that in all these cases listed in the Mishnah, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that lo mi boy, I don't even have to tell you that if he violated an Issa d'oraisa, that passes him for Dayanus. But even if he only violated an Issa d'rabbanon, or even beyond that, maybe the Rabbanan created a psul because they suspected a person of lying, even though he technically didn't violate any Isser whatsoever, not even an Isser Rabbanan, because we're going to see later that one interpretation of Masachik Bekubius that has nothing to do with Asmachta, and the psul is based on something else, which we'll get to soon. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan passeled him because they felt he was not a reliable person. So this is what we call a psul derabanan. And we're going to have to see that that there may be nafgiminis between a psul d'oraisa and a psul derabanan. Then we have a malva beribis, one who extends a loan on interest. This is very problematic, because how could Tosfos say that the Mishnah is listing psulim derabanan? In the case of Malva Beribis, he violates a Lav D'Oraisa, that would not be a Derabanan. And the answer might be one of two things. Either it's not Ribis Kitsutsa, they didn't decide up front exactly how much interest he's going to pay, and that's only a Ribis Derabanan. Or alternatively, even in a case of Ribis D'Oraisa, if a person is convinced that he's not doing anything wrong, he, the Malv, is extending a loan. He's tying up his money for a certain period of time. The Lova, with full approval, has paid him interest. That's not, in the minds of the Malv and the Lova, that's not considered a violation of a Doraisa. When does a person become possible for Eidus for Dayonis? That's when he knowingly, deliberately violates an Issa Doraisa. But if he fools himself into thinking that it's only Derabanan, if he fools himself in thinking that this is heter, that this is permissible, then he's not posel midoraisa, he's not choshed to lie and perjure himself, and so forth. The Rabbanan posseled him. Why? Because Rabbanan said, look how much money, look how he desires money. He wants to get the interest. A person who is in such, has such a craving to get money, he might purge himself and lie. Then we have a more complicated case. That's called Mafriche Yonim. Now, there are two interpretations of what Mafriche Yonim are. Let's start with the classical understanding. This is also a kind of gambling. They used to have dove races or pigeon races. You know, I would train my pigeon to fly as fast as he could, you yours, and then we would race and we would put down money as a gamble. The pshat is problematic because that seems to be just a repetition of Masachi Bakubia. Why did the Mishnah have to mention Mafricha Yonim as a separate category? It's basically, again, the same issue of Asmachta Lokanya. And that's going to lead us to a different interpretation of Mafricha Yonim, which we'll get to Mirtz Hashem in the Gemara. Then we have a Socharei Shvius. You know that in Shvius the Torah says Li Ochla, that the fruits that are sanctified with Kedusha Shvius have to be eaten, and you're not allowed to do business with them. And he went ahead and he collected his peros and he sold them on the market. So again, Lechora, he violates an Iser Do'oraisa. So the Rishonim say, Tosus points out, that we're talking Bizman Azeh, and Bizman Azeh Shvius is only Derabana. Amar Rav Shimon, Batchila Hayu Korin Osan Osve Shvius. Originally they called them Shvius gatherers. Misharabu Hanasim Chazu Likrosam Sochre Shvius. The Gemara will explain this. We'll wait to see the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai. Now this is critical. We don't know what the word Amosai means. Either Rabbi Yehuda is coming to interpret the Mishnah, or he is arguing with the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. He says, "Bizman she'ein lam umnus ella hu." These gamblers have no other source of income. They're totally dependent upon their gambling. Aval yeshlehem umnus shalohu. If he has a different source of income other than the gambling, like he works from 9 to 5 and he gambles at night, is then ksherim, that's not called a mesachik bekubia. Mesachik bekubia has nothing in his life but mesachik bekubia. Why should that make a difference? That's what the Gemara is going to try to analyze. And secondly, is Rabbi Yehuda arguing with the Tanakhama, or is he interpreting the Tanakhama? So first let's find out what exactly Mesachik Bekubia is, and I told you that there are two ways of understanding Mesachik Bekubia. Gemara says, "My Ka'ovid, why is he posuliatus? What did he do?" Amar Rami Bar Chama Mishum Davi Asmachta Vasmachta Lo Kanya. So according to Rami Bar Chama, we have a principle that when a person enters into a commitment, but he has no anticipation of losing, of having to pay up for that commitment, then he never had what's called a Gemiras Das. He never had a real decision to pay that sum of money. And if the other person collects that sum, it's Gzela. So in truth, according to Rami Bar Chama, the Mesachik Bekubia that's possible is only the one who wins, not the one who loses. But the assumption is that if a person is a gambler, sometimes he wins and sometimes he loses. If he wins, he's stealing from the other person, and therefore he is a gazlan. Again, he's not a gazlan to Oraisa, because he didn't put his hand into someone else's pocket and steal something, but nevertheless, he's a gazlan de Rabbanan. The Rabbanan prohibited gambling. Today we would say that the Rabbanan would prohibit gambling because it's addictive. But even in the Gemara's context, it's asmachta lo kanya, which means he never assumed that he would lose. He thought that that at the end of the day he would win, and therefore he never really had a complete das to be makne his moment. Yeah, David.
The one who wins also had thought that he would win. So why is he a thief? The one who wins thought he would win. So how is he a thief?
Because he's taking money from the one who lost. Now the one who lost doesn't really owe him that money. Why? Because asmachta lo kanya. There was never a valid kinyan, because every kinyan, every eschaivus, if I decide that I commit myself to give you money, that's only if my decision is 100%. It's foolproof. It's a mature, deliberate decision, a complete decision. Here, the Chachamim say, according to this man, the Omer Asmachta Lokanya, that he never really expected to lose. He goes into the gamble thinking that he's going to win. He never had, therefore, Gemiras Das. On the other hand, you know, no one's going to play with him if he doesn't cough up the money. The one who takes his money, the winner in this case, is violating an Isa Gzela Midrabbanan.
Why is it the Ruso also violating? Was the Messiah Eile Davar Avera?
Oh, okay. So then you have to know exactly what kind of an Avera disqualifies a person for Eidus and Dayonus. We're going to get to that a little later, but the principle of Rava that we're going to see later is that not every Avera passes you for testimony or for judgment. It's got to be an Avera of Mammon, some sort of indication that you're starving to get money. So the person who wins, he takes someone else's money illegally, again on a Drabbanan level, if you assume a smakta lo kanya, that's already a desire of money. A person who violates the Fnei Iver, okay, that's a different kind of an Avera, but it's not an Avera Shebimam. Okay, that depends on how you learn the Fnei Iver. So he writes in the footnote, which I think is more or less what we said, that the person who enters into this gambling agreement, he assumes that the outcome will be favorable and he will not have to pay. So since he transfers ownership over the money, then one who accepts his money in an asmachta agreement is really stealing someone else's money. This is Rami Bar Chama. Each player assumes that he is going to win, and therefore the loser is not really willingly surrendering his money. He's giving over his money because of the nature of the game. Those are the rules of the game. And the winner is considered stealing midrabon. Now, that's according to Rami Bar Chama. Rav Sheshes Omar, kol kai gavno lav asmachtahu. That's not the case of asmacht. Why? When a person gambles, he realizes full well that it's not in his control. There's an element here of luck. Not the way we explained it before, that he thinks he's such a card shark that he's going to win the dice. He knows how to spin the dice. No. He realizes up front that there's only a suffix here whether or not he's going to win. But nevertheless, he entered into the game and he made a commitment. That's not called a smacht at all. That's not an iffy kind of decision to pay. It was a total deliberate decision to pay. What would be a classical case of asmachta? Because mind you, Rav Sheshes agrees in principle to Rami Bar Chama that asmachta lo kanya. And the answer is, that would be a case where, let's say I'm a worker, you contract me to do some work, and I accept upon myself a penalty that if I don't live up to my commitment, and I don't do the work, I will pay you such and such. Or, for example, let's say you lent me money, 100 zuz. I only have 50 zuz in my pocket. I give you 50, and I accept upon myself that in event that I don't pay you the other 50 on time, you'll have the shtar, which means that you'll collect a full 100. So I've accepted upon myself a penalty. In these cases, that is called asmachta. Why? Because I realize that I'm going to show up for work. When I accept upon myself a penalty, I never ever believed that that penalty would come to fruition. Or if I accepted a penalty for not paying the remainder of the balance of the loan, the debt, I had a full-fledged decision. I'm sorry. I was fully dependent upon the fact that I know I have the money, or I'll get the money, and I'll pay you up. I never dreamt that I would have to pay a penalty. And therefore, if you take my money, that's called gzeila, because asmachta lo kanya. But in a case where I know up front that it's not biyadi, I can't control it, this is gambling depends upon luck, then I made an absolute commitment, knowing full well, entering into this agreement, that I may or may not win, I may or may not have to pay you, and that's a full-fledged agreement according to Rav Sheshes. So the machlokas between Rami Bar Chama and Rav Sheshes is not about the fundamental principle that asmachta lo kanya, but the question is, when... how do we relate to a gambler? Do we assume that the gambler expects to win, and therefore he's like the case of someone who expects to pay up his debt or to do the work that he was committed to do, never expecting to lose? That becomes asmachta. Or do we say no, like Rav Sheshes understood it, that he knew up front that there's an element here of luck, and no matter how good he is as a card shark, he may very well lose, and therefore he made an absolute commitment.
When it comes to asmachta ba'alma, is it morally correct in it that the person who's going to be receiving the money as Gezel should say, I'm not taking it.
Correct. That's what the halacha requires. He's not allowed to take it. But a gambler is going to take it, because that's why he entered into the game. And if he takes it, which is what a gambler is all about, he violates Gezel Midivrayim, because Asmachta Lo Kanya. It's not Gezel Doraisa, because all over the Bavas, and especially in Bava Kama, the Gemara quotes a pasuk, Vayigzol Asachanis Miyad HaMitzri, that Gzela means, I literally take it out of your hands. Now, according to Rav Sheshes, we're stuck with our Mishnah, because Rav Sheshes holds that gambling is not a problem. Why is it not a problem? Because Asmachta Lo, because in this case it's not an Asmachta. He made a full-fledged decision, taking into consideration that he wouldn't win the game. So why is our Mishnah, in the opening sentence of our Mishnah, say that a Masachi Bekuvi is possible? Says Rav Sheshes, the Rabbanan passed him for an entirely different reason. Elo lefi she'ein asukim bishuvo shel olam, because the gambler is so dedicated to gambling that he doesn't get involved in any sort of business dealings. He has no, you know, he has no familiarity with the market out there, and in such a case, he doesn't sense the significance of illegal activity. He's not sensitive to that. He doesn't have a repulsion against taking money from someone else. He's a person who's not osek bishuvo shel ol, meaning literally he doesn't contribute to society. This has, by the way, you know, if you were to say a drasha, this has philosophical implications, that a person is brought to this world to contribute something to this world. He's not meant to be here as a parasite on this world. And the Rabbanan felt that such a person might be tempted to take someone else's money. Now, but is it true that
in this case he's going to be a witness or a judge? If he's not involved in the world, then he's not going to be able to judge or witness correctly.
Correct. That's what we're saying. That he, when it comes to Dine Mominus and Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, an absolute commitment to justice, he's out of the ballpark, say the Chacham. We can't rely on him to be absolutely upstanding and just. But again, that's because he's ain't osik bishuv shalom. Now, I wouldn't submit to you that every single gambler is you know, has no other job. My beinayu, what's the difference between Rami Bar Chama Rav Sheshes? Ika beinayu de gomar umnusa achrite. So he works during the day, he has a good job, and at night he gambles. Where do you find him at night? You find him in the what do they call it?
The casinos,
right? He's in the casinos at night. So if I go like Rami Bar Chama, Asmachta Lo Kanya, that he's really stealing, what difference does it make if he works during the day and steals at night? He's Pasul L'Dayonis. If on the other hand I accept the Shita of Rav Sheshes, then it means that he's not Osek Bishuv Shalom. This man is Osek Bishuv Shalom. He knows all the, you know, he's acquainted with business laws and commerce and interpersonal relations in the financial market. And therefore he'd be cautious. So now we have to go back to our Mishnah, because if you remember, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah made a statement that the psul of Masachi Bekubia only applies she'ein lehem umnus. And if we assume that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakhama did not accept that qualification, meaning even if he has another job, he's pasul b'toras gambler, then the machlokis here between Rav Sheshes and Rami Bar Chama is in effect the machlokis between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. Usnan, the Gemara says, look at the Mishnah. Om Rav Yehuda, Emasai Bizman, She'ein Lam Umnus Elohu, Abel Yesh Lam Umnus Elohu, Sherim. If he has another job, he has another source of income, even though he gambles at night, he is kosher. Alma, what do we see? Taiba de Masnisa, Mishum, Yeshuvo, Shel Olam Hu. Now, the Gemara at this point is assuming that Rabbi Yehuda's Emasai is an embellishment, is an interpretation of the Chacham. He's not arguing with the Chacham, but he's explaining the Chacham. If that be the case, then both the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda are saying that the problem with the Masachi Bekubia is that he has no job. But if he does have a job, then he's okay, he's cautious. Kashal Rabbi Bar Chama. Rabbi Bar Chama says that we have a problem of Gezel, because Asmachta Lo Kanya, and he never expected to lose the gamble. V'chitame, so you'll argue, pligi rabbanon alei derab Yehuda, that enochinami the rabbanon never accepted this qualification, the rabbanon in an unqualified way, which is called stama demaslis, and as we said before, would extend the psul of mesachim pikuvi even to a person who has a day job, and he's in the casinos at night. So the Gemara says you can't say that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing the Tanakam and the Chachamim never accepted Rabbi Yehuda, because we have a principle of Amosai. What's the principle of Amosai? You know, there are certain like literary rules that apply to the literature of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi of the Mishnah. But Omar Rebbe Yoshua ben Levi, we have a statement of Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi called Mokom Sha'omar Rabbi Yehuda. Whenever Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah, here we start Chaf Hei Amid Aleph, Amosai Ubameh. Okay, that's another word, another key phrase, but we're focused now for our purposes in our Mishnah on Amosai. Eino Ela Mefarish Divrei Chachamim. He's not coming to argue, but Amosai means when did the Chachamim make that statement? He's clarifying it. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Amosai Lefarish Ubamel Lachlok. Rabbi Yochanan didn't want to go as far as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in the case of Ubamel. Both of them agree that me emasai is an interpretation. The kuli alma emasai lefareshu. Lefaresh means to explain. In which case, the chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda that if he has another job, he's bless you, he's kosher. So the Gemara says, Gavra, Gavra, Karamis. You're asking a question on Rami Bar Chama based on Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. You can't ask the question from one Amora to another Amora. Mar Sovra pligi, Mar Sovra lo pligi. It means that Rami Bar Chama never accepted this principle that Me'emasai is a pirush. According to Rami Bar Chama, Me'emasai also indicates a disagreement. And therefore, Rami Bar Chama says that the Chachamim never accepted this qualification of Rabbi Yehuda if he has another umnus. But rather, the psul of Mesachim B'Kuvi is all-inclusive. And even if he has another job, since he's stealing money at night through the gambling, he's possible.
Stealing?
Oh, so that's the part that you missed here, right? So that's called asmachta lo kanya, meaning since he expects to win the game, he never really made that commitment to pay up if he loses the game. And therefore the winner, when he takes his money, that's called gzela. Again, it's gzela derabbanan. Fine. So the Gemara now has a kasha on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan. Velo pligi, are you right to assume that since he used the word, Rabbi Yehuda used the word Me'emasai, it's an interpretation? Vasanya, we have a brisa that says, Bein sheyesh lo umnus. Shalohu. Shalohu means other than. Gambling. Bein sheyesh lo umnus. Elohu, the only source of income he has is from gambling. Harezeh posul. So clearly there's a brisa that indicates that there's a psul here of Mesachik B'Kubya based on Asmachta Lokanya, and therefore that psul extends even to a person who is Osek B'Yeshuva Shalom, he has another profession. So you see that there must be a Machlokes Tanoim, and you cannot maintain the position that Me'emasai is a pirush, and everybody, even the Chachamim, agreed to this principle called Eino Osek Yishuv B'Shalolam. So Gemara answers, Ahi, that brisa is Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. He, the Sanya we learned in a brisa. This is a complicated case. A person walks by. We don't know if he's a nazir or not a nazir. I guess we know probably that he's a candidate. He thought about becoming a nazir. And there are two people who are watching this person pass by. One person says, if this person is a nazir, then I'm also a nazir. And the other person says, if he's not a nazir, I'm a nazir. Now, each one wanted to prove and demonstrate, or what word do I want to use? He wanted to be dramatic about how convinced he was in one way or the other. You know, Reuven said, I know he's not a Nazir. And if he is a Nazir, I'll become a Nazir. And Shimon said, I know he is a Nazir. And if he's not a Nazir, I'll become a Nazir. One of them became a Nazir. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Tarfon Li'olam Ein Echad V'Hem Nazir. Neither of them have a din of a Nazir. Even though one of them, by definition, will be a Nazir, we'll find out if the guy who passed by was a Nazir. L'fishlo nitna nazirus el hafla, that when a person accepts upon himself nazirus, it's hafla. Hafla means it's an absolute, clear enunciation. and we know that he committed himself beyond a shadow of a doubt to being a Nazir. Here, nobody knows what the status of this person is who's walking by. Is he a Nazir or not? Each one took a chance and gambled that maybe he'll become a Nazir. In such a case, says Rabbi Tarfon, this is not a Kabbalas Nazirus. And if we apply that logic to a case of gambling as far as money is concerned, then once again we come to the conclusion that Asmachta lo kanya, that he never really had a full commitment to pay up if he loses the game, because he doesn't expect to lose. And in such a case, what the Gemara is saying now to defend Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan is that although it's true that in our Mishnah there's no machlokas between the Chachom and Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda's Me'emasai is a Pirush, but nevertheless, if you found a Braisa that says that the Psul of Mesachik Bekubya is based on Asmachta Lo Kanya, and you have a problem because we don't know any Tana that argues with our Mishnah according to that interpretation of Me'emasai as a Pirush, the answer is I do have a Tana who argues. We don't accept his opinion, but that's Rabbi Tarfon. And how do I know this? Because Rabbi Tarfon holds that unless you make a full-fledged absolute commitment, knowing that beyond a doubt this commitment is going to be Chal, then it's not Chal at all. And that's why this case of Kabbalas Naziris is not valid. And therefore, in the case of gambling, Enochinami, there's a problem of Gezel. And therefore, if there's a problem of Gezel, then even if he has another source of income, nevertheless, he's possible b'toras mesachik b'kubya gazlan havi. And that's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon. So we have a Braisa that records a Shita in the Tanoim, and therefore we can maintain that position that there is someone who certainly holds that there's an absolute unconditional psul of a Mesachik Bekubya. Now in the literature here on this Gemara, you should just be aware of the fact that there's a bunch of questions here. Tosus, how can the Gemara make an analogy between Kabbalas Nazirus and Mekach Umemkar in buying and selling Nazirus? The Torah says, Ish ki yafli lindar neda lahazel Hashem. Yafli means that there's a special adjective here that the Torah described to the Nazir. The Nazir was yafli. He took an absolute commitment, which was crystal clear, that he wants to be a Nazir. The Torah added that description with regard to Nazir. That has no implication universally beyond the four walls of the four cubits of Nazirus. How can the Gemara make an analogy between Nazirus and Mekach Umemkar? But apparently, the Gemara is assuming that the concept of hafla means Gemiras Das. It's not a special halach of a new type of Gemiras Das. This is the measured by the parameters of universal Gemiras Das. The Torah added the word afla to make sure that there was a clarity in the way he formulated his words. Okay, let's go on to Malve Beribis. Amar Rava Love Beribis Posul Liedus. In other words, Altatius Yodcha im Rasha Lios Eid Chamas. The Torah says you're not allowed to be, you cannot join up with someone else as a witness who is guilty of Chamas, of some sort of thievery. And Rava says that even someone who is guilty of Ribis, of taking interest, he also is an Eid Chamas. He's also possible. Why? Because if he is tempted to violate the law, the prohibition against ribis, because he wants money, then he's also like a gazlan. Again, he didn't steal anything, but he's also, in effect, like a gazlan. Again, in our Mishnah, we might be talking about ribis shena katsutz, as we said, and therefore it's not a psul doraisa, but in any event, if a person absolutely violates ribis doraisa, says Rava, he would be posul yedus midoraisa, because this is called an avera shebemamon. Any violation that has monetary gains, a person who lends money in order to get interest, he's so desiring to get money that he'll violate the Torah law, he is disqualified. He is someone who is suspect to lying in Bezdin. In fact, the Gemara asks a question. Vanantnan malve beribis. According to you, Rava, what engenders the psul of Eidus? It's the violation of the Torah law. Why does the Mishnah then say malve beribis, the one who lends the money? Even the love who borrowed the money and paid the ribis is in violation of the Isur ribis. And in order to answer this Gemara, this question of the Gemara changes the vocalization of the word malve. Instead of putting a pasach under the mem and reading it as malve, put a chirik under the mem. And that changes it to milve. And what does milve mean? Milve means a loan. Not the malve, the lender, but milve means the loan. Haba berivis. And this loan has rivis built in it. That includes even the love. So it means that according to Rava, any violation of ribis passels you for edus, even if you're the lover who's paying the ribis. And apparently Rava's logic is that anyone who's involved in a monetary violation of the Torah law, you never know where that's going to lead to. You know, it's more logical to assume the malva might want to cheat somebody out of money. The lova is offering extra money in order to get money. But you see that the lova is also desperate for money. He violates the Torah law, pays ribis, in order to get this loan. If he's in such a desperate situation that he's willing to violate the Torah law, then who knows if somebody can't bribe him and he'll violate the Torah law in order to receive a bribe and perjure himself in Beis Din. The Gemara tells a story now. Bar Benitus.
Sorry, yeah. But does this apply to somebody who deals in loaning and borrowing? Or does it deal to, I mean, you get people...
Ah, excellent. Yeah. Brilliant question. The Gemara's going to... Going to pick that up very soon. What about an accidental, not a loan shark, but an accidental borrower or lender beribis? And it could be that the Gemara is going to raise the same question, Brian, with regard to a mesachik pekuvia. Let's say somebody invited you to play a game of cards, you know, and you gambled once. You did it once in your life. I don't know why. Either socially you were pressured, or you know, what the heck? It's fun. Let's try it. You know, I've heard so much about gambling. You know, I'm down in Las Vegas. You know, and there's a couple of slot machines. You know, put a quarter in. What the heck? Let's see. Maybe all of a sudden things will coming down. So is that enough to? Or we're talking about someone who's dedicated. Again, according to Rav Sheshes, it's someone who's Eino Osik Bishuva Shalola. It means he's a full-time gambler. But according to Rami Bar Chama, he violates this Isur. What if he violated it once on a transitory basis? Anyway, now let's get back to the story of Bar Benitus. Bar Benitus is what's called the Nidon in this case. He's on trial. And Ashidu Beitrei Sadi, two witnesses came to testify against him. Chad Omar once said, Kamididi, I witnessed Ozif Biribusa, that he extended a loan on the condition that he would receive interest. Vechad Omar, and the other witness said, Lididi Ozfe Biribus, I paid him interest. And what did Rava say, based on the testimony of those two Edim? Because again, according to both witnesses, Bar Benitus actually took interest. But the only problem is that the second aide admitted that he was the one who paid the interest. Is Psola Rava Lebar Benitus? Rava accepted the two witnesses and disqualified Bar Benitus for testimony. So the Gemara asked, wait a minute, for Ravu Diomar Love Beribis Posuliatus, anyone who violates the Isa Ribis is Posuliatus. So how can you accept the second witness who by his own confession admits that he's a Rasha, that he paid ribis in a loan agreement. Okay. Vahavile Rasha. Vatora Omar Altatius Rasha. Leos Aid. So how could Rava rely on that second witness? Rava Litameh, the answer is the Omar Rava Adam Karavetz al Atzmo, the Eno de Mesim Atzmo Rasha. Now Rabosa, in order to appreciate this Gemara, you have to know a Gemara back on Daf Tes, which hopefully you know very well, and that's the famous sugya of Palginon Dibura. It means if a person testifies against so and so, but in that testimony he implicates himself, For example, he says Ploni Ravani, you know, in that kind of relationship. So he's admitting, he's confessing about himself that he's posel. So how can he be kosher to be made on the Roveya? So Gemara says Palgina Dibur, we can split it in half. We can accept that which he said about someone else without accepting that which he said about himself.
It's like a state's witness.
Is that what it's called, a state's witness?
No, that's what they do now. He gets off by becoming a witness for the state, electing for the things that he's done.
Interesting. So the Gemara says that Rava is the one who says that Adam Karvetz al Atzmo, meaning when he testifies about himself, that the second witness, and he says, well, I was the one who paid ribbis to this Barbanitus, then he cannot testify himself because he's a Karov. He's a Karov to himself. V'eino de Mesim Atzmo Rasha. We have a principle that a person, when he testifies, and you may say, well, but at least he confessed the crime. So the Gemara says, no, we don't accept self-incrimination. There's no such thing in Allah as self-incrimination. Ain't on the Mesa Matzvah Rosh. And therefore, whatever he said about himself, implicating himself as a Rosha, is not to be accepted. We completely cut that out of his Avis. What we accept is what he testifies about the Malva, in this case, Barbenitus, that he witnessed the Malva extending a loan with interest. Now, at this point in the Gemara wants to know, in all the cases in our Mishnah where he's disqualified because he violated the law, how does he reinstate himself and do tshuva? We can't say that a person has crossed all red lines and will never accept him. So the Gemara tells the following story. Ahu Tabacha, my father's could have written this Gemara because he was a rav in Bangor, Maine, 100 years ago almost. And that's where a lot of shechita came through. My father ultimately had to give up his job because he tried to get rid of two shoftim. He knew that they were being machel, nevelus, and trefus. But they were too powerful for him. So at the end, they ran him out of town. This was my father at the age of 22 years old. Anyway, hahu tabcha dishtakach denafka trefasa mituse yadeh. They found out, they discovered that he was a butcher who was selling trefa meat. In other words, the shechita was a shechita psula, and yet he was pawning it off as if it was kosher meat. Pasle Rav Nachman v'avresh. So Rav Nachman said, from now on, this guy is not going to be trusted as a butcher, and he removed him from his position. That's not a chiddush, by the way. But the chiddush is going to be, can we reinstate him at some point when he rectifies his avera? Ozal Rabbi Mazye Vitarfe. So this butcher went and he did tshuva. How do we know he did tshuva? So when a person publicly degrades himself, has it called in English, in Hebrew it's called nivul. Called in English,
he debases himself.
It's like, again, I don't know if this is politically correct, so make believe I didn't say this, but you have homeless people. I don't know if you have it in every country in the world, and you see them, and they grow their hair because they don't take showers and so forth and so on. You know that in New York we call it the Bowery. I don't know if you ever heard of it. You know, that's where these people hang out, and they, you know, they get a few cents, and they you know, they panhandle, they beg you, and then they go ahead and buy cheap liquor, and they get drunk. It's never. So what this guy did, this butcher, he was so profoundly impacted by the fact that he was caught pawning off non-kosher meat, he went ahead and he grew his hair long, and he grew his fingernails long. That's what we call nivul. So Rav Nachman Achshuri, Rav Nachman said, this guy has done tshuva. Let's reinstate him. Amalei Rava said to Rav Nachman, Dilma irume kamar arem. He wants to get his jaw back. That's his source of parnasa. And he's fooling us. You know, he's showing us as if he's doing tshuva, but he really never did a severe tshuva. So the Gemara now asks, well, according to Rava, so how does a person reinstate himself? When, at what point do you say that he did tshuva? Elamai takante. What's the answer? How could he reinstate himself? Kidrabi Idi Bar Ovin, the Omer of Idi Bar Ovin, Hachoshadala Trefos, Ein Lo Takona, Chi Yelech Lemokom, Shein Makirinoso. He has to find himself incognito in a place where nobody recognizes him. Viachzir Aveda Bidover Choshev. And he has to indicate that he's willing to give up on something sizable, considerable value, for the sake of the mitzvah of the Torah. In other words, he no longer considers the love of money. Why is this butcher selling non-kosher meat? Because he needs money. He wants money. He has a love for money. If he indicates that he's willing to give up on money for the sake of observing the Torah law, then he has reinstated himself as an ethical person. Another alternative is Oshiyotzi Trefa Mitachas Yod V'Davar Chashim Mishalom. He takes a cow. It's worth hundreds. And he declares, he admits that it was trefa, it was not a kosher shechita, and he suffers a serious financial loss. The cow is worth thousands, but he wants to do tshuva. He has to go ahead and prove it. The Gemara is going to go ahead and go through all the cases of a psul and a mishnah and show how far he has to go in order to reinstate himself as a kosher dayan. Mafriche yonim. The Gemara says, "My mafriach yona." First, before we go to tshuva, the Gemara wants to know what is a mafriach yona, and the Gemara offers two views on that. Hacha here in Bavel is tirgama; they interpreted it, "I takdime yona yonach liyoni." If your pigeon gets to the final end zone, you know, before my pigeon, I'll pay you. What do you say?
Finishing post.
The finishing post. That's called gambling. And again, we're going to have to ask ourselves why the Mishnah had to bother with Mafriche Yon. It's just a repetition of Mesachei Pekubia. Rabbi Chama Bar Oshia Omar, what do you have here? Aura? Is that what you have? Don't all answer at once. I can't hear so many voices. You know.
Yeah, aura.
So what, you have a kamatz under the aleph and a kamatz under the resh?
Kamatz, yeah.
Okay. In mine, it's I can't even see it. So ara. So what's ara? Ara means that I want to get your pigeon. So I send out my pigeon in a way that I'll be able to follow him. I'll trail him. And then as soon as your pigeons come out to meet my pigeon, I'm going to steal your pigeons. Now, you might ask, well, is that person a gazlan? You know, he's stealing other people's pigeons. He's using his pigeon as a decoy, you know, to tempt the other pigeons for coming. And he trains his pigeon in such a way that he can follow the pigeon and then grab the other pigeons. Then he's a gazlan. So the Gemara is assuming that nobody really owns those pigeons. You claim ownership of those pigeons, and therefore you blame this Mafriche Yona for stealing your pigeons, but you don't really technically own those pigeons. Those pigeons flew into your coop from Hefker, and you never actually made a kinyan on those pigeons. And the Mishnah in Masechta Gittin establishes that even though technically he doesn't own those pigeons, but there's something called Gezel Midivrehem. The Rabbanan created an Iser Gezel Mishum Darkei Shalom, because otherwise people are gonna kill each other. So in order to make society function in a peaceful way, they established that if pigeons went into so-and-so's coop, you're not allowed to touch those pigeons. They're considered as if they're his, even though technically he never made a kinyan on them. Mandi Omar Itak Dime Yonach Liyon. If it's really just another way of gambling, my time alo Omar Ora, why did he reject the second shot? And Omar Lachai says, Ora Mipne Darki Shalom Bi Alma, when the Rabbanon in the Mishnah Gittin established that you're not allowed to take someone else's pigeons that went into his coop, that's not Gezel. The Rabbanon never established ownership over the pigeons. Not even Midivrayim. It's only a separate Isur of Mitnei Darkei Sholem. So it's not Gzelen. As we said before, you can only passel someone and disqualify them either for a judge or for witnesses if they were in violation of stealing. And here it's not stealing. It's only Darkei Sholem. So I really am not allowed to entice your pigeons from your coop and try to steal them, but they're not really your pigeons. And therefore, the first Man Yomer says, that's not called Gezel. Again, you violated the takon of the Chazal of Bnei Dar Kisholim. Bnei Dar Kisholim is not Gezel, it's not theft. Uman Yomer Ora, he's of the opinion that Bnei Dar Kisholim is Gezel, and therefore if you entice his pigeons, his, again, because they entered into his coop, and you grab them, that's considered midrabon and gezel, and therefore you postulate, but my time alo omar, itaktim eyonach liyon, why couldn't he say that it was a gambling situation? And the Gemara answers, omar lecha hainu mesachik v'kubya, why would the Mishnah repeat itself? The Mishnah doesn't have to list all different forms of gambling. I imagine in our day, in contemporary society, there are probably tens of different ways you can gamble. Right, they have roulette wheels. Did I pronounce that right?
People gamble on anything.
Roulette.
Roulette? Oh, you pronounce the T? Roulette wheels. And they have slot machines. And they have poker games. Who else? Can anybody else add to the list?
People bet on, if it's going to slow,
cars. Horse racing. Horse racing. Now, I'm not sure that horse racing is gambling. I'm not sure. I'll tell you why. Because it could be... Again, I don't know beans about horse racing, so whatever I tell you is probably shtus for hevel. But it could be in the case of horse racing, you could actually research the horse in terms of its past performance.
Handicapping.
Yeah, so that might be something different, because then he made a decision based on his own, you know, research and past performance that he's going to win that money. And if he's decided that he's going to win that money, then he's not stealing anybody else's money. I don't know. You have to think about that. Okay. In any event, the Edoch, so what is the first Man Yomer going to do? Why did the Mishnah feel compelled to add a new category of what? Of Mafriche Yonim, if we already have Mesachi Bekubya? Tana, the Mishnah wants to tell us two categories. Number one, Tole Bedas Atzmo, Vitana Tole Bedas Yono. In the case of gambling with cards or with dice, he thinks that he has a skill, so he relies on his skill, and therefore he doesn't even dream that he's going to lose the gamble. That's called asmachta lo kanya, and therefore this gezel. In the case of the pigeons, he relies on the skill of the pigeon, right? He did his research, or he trained the pigeon, and he assumes that the pigeon is going to come in first. So in those cases, you might say that in each case it's a little bit different. Utsricha. We would need both cases. Because again, in one case he's relying on his own skills, in the other case he's relying on the proficiency of the pigeon. I would say that's called Gezel, and therefore he's Posilyedus, Hasamhu de Lo Gomaru Mikni. Certainly he relied on himself, and he expected, he anticipated winning. He never had an absolute kibiris das to pay up if he loses. He never even expected to lose. The Omar, and he declares, and now we're looking at Chofayim and Beis, Kimli Benafshai the Adana Tvei. I'm a better gambler and a card player than my friend. And therefore, he never thought he would have to pay. That's called but in the case where he depends upon the skill of his bird, aim a low, perhaps in such a case he knew up front that he may or may not win, and therefore he had a full Gemiras Das, and he's not in violation of Gezel. So the Mishnah wants to tell me that Chiddush, that even in the case of Mafriche Yonim, where he realizes that it's totally in luck, you know, no matter how much he trained his pigeon, how does he know that Yenim, the other guy, didn't train his pigeon even better than him? So therefore I would assume that maybe he entered into this pigeon gamble knowing full well that he might lose. Kamashvel, no, he still expects to win because he trained this pigeon well. V'itana tola b'das yono, if the Mishnah would have told us that mafriche yonim, who rely on the skill of the Yonah, they're apostle Yedus, that's considered asmach lo kanya the Omar, because he said, b'nakosha talya milsa v'anoya dana l'nekushe tfei. There's a way of stimulating the pigeon to run even faster. They used to take certain kinds of pieces of wood, and they would bang it one against the other, and that noise would encourage the Yonah to go further. And I know how to do it. I've become an expert at this skill, and therefore, once again, he's assuming he's going to win. I will tola vidas atzmo. In the case of gambling, there emo lo. Perhaps he realized that the element of luck here is most primary, and therefore he knew going in that he might lose, but he made that agreement, and therefore it's not an asmachta, which was indeed the shita that we saw early in the Gemara. Tzricha, therefore I need both cases. Meisvei, the Gemara says,
but basically it's exactly the same thing, but you're looking at it from another point of view.
Right, at the end of the day, in both categories, if you hold that mafricha yona is another form of gambling, then the psul is based on asmachta lo kanya. The only question is it really an asmachta, or did he make a full-fledged decision? And that's where we can go in both directions, in tola b'das atzma, tola b'das ayona, and that's this tzrichusa. But it, as you say, Doc, very well, the bottom line is that in both cases, the psul is identical. According to the Olaman di Omar, Mafricha Yona is a whole different story. Mafricha Yona has nothing to do with gambling per se. It has to do with stealing. The only issue is that called stealing because Yenim's pigeons never were acquired by him technically. They only entered into his coop. Meisve, the Gemara wants to prove that we're talking about Mafricha Yona is considered gambling. Hamasachik Bekubya. This brisa lists Mesachik Bekubya. Eluhein Hamasachikim Bifisfasin. As I said before, they didn't have dice the way we have dice, you know, very sophisticated methods of gambling. What they used to do is they used to take a piece of wood and cut it into a cube. And then the Brisa says, Velova Fisfin Bilvada Amru, you know, that was the classical way of gambling, but let's say they didn't have these Fisfasin. El Afilu Klipe Agozim, U Klipe Rimonim, you know, if they were desperate enough, they would take nutshells, or they would take the shells of pomegranates, and they would use that as a method of gambling. So even though that's not classical gambling, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they indicate how desperate they are to gamble, and that's asmachta lo kanya. The emasai chazarosam. At what point can we reinstate a gambler and say that he did tshuva? Mishi yishberu es pisfaseihem v'yachzu bahem chazara gemura. What they have to do is, it's not enough that they declare, I'm no longer a gambler, I'm giving up gambling. They have to go ahead and demonstrate their rectification, their reformation process by actually destroying those utensils that are designated for gambling. That goes very far. The afilu bechinam lo avdi, which means they will not engage in gambling even for free, because they got rid of those wooden fisfasin. Malva beribis, how do they reinstate themselves? Echad malva v'echad alove. And again, it applies both to the lender and the borrower. V'emasai chazarosam, how do they do tshuva? What they used to do is they would prepare a shtar, a document, which indicated in the document that there was going to be a collection of interest. And that was necessary so that if a candidate came by, they wouldn't have to write the shtar, because paying a scribe to write up a shtar was a whole to do. So they had their shtaras in the drawer, prepared for ribbis. Mishi yikru eshtarehem. They're going to take these documents and rip them to shreds. The yachzer ben chazor gemura, that's called an absolute tshuva. And the Gemara says, "Vafilu."
He still has to pay back the captain. He still borrowed money. He's going to give back the money without the interest.
That's an interesting question. So you're saying the following: the only question I'm going to have, Doc, is how does that impact on gambling? Okay, I don't know. In any event, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Rashi says this or Tosa says it. Yeah, it was upgraded. The Gemara didn't even bother mentioning that the ribbis has to be returned. As long as he continues to hold on to the ribbis, then he's certainly not doing tshuva. So that was assumed. The chiddush of the Braisa is that even though they return the ribbis, that itself is not enough. They have to go a step further in order to demonstrate their tshuva. They need what's called a chazara gemura. Chazara gemura means the following, I think. If he did it like this, it's not enough that he goes back to this. He has to go to this. Meaning he has to go from one extreme to the other. That's Chazara Gemura. Now, for example, what would be Chazara Gemura in the case of Mafriche Yonim? You might say, well, he should hold on to, or let's say Masach Bakubi, he should hold on to the Fisfisim, and he'll use them to play for fun without gambling any money. No, he has to go to the other extreme. Now, what's the other extreme in Malvi Beribis? So the Braisa starts with saying that they ripped up the shtaros. But the Braisa then concludes that even that is not extreme enough. Obviously, if the shtar says ribis on it, it's valueless because now he did tshuva and he would never extend the loan with ribis. So the Braisa adds, afilu in nachri lo muzfe. He wants to be machik himself so far away from temptation, from the temptation to receive ribbis, that even in situations where he's allowed to take ribbis, like in the gambling case where he's going to play with the dice, but he's not putting any money down just for the fun of it, here too, the Torah allows you to take ribbis from a non-Jew, but he's not even going to take ribbis from a non-Jew, even though he's allowed to, because he wants to stay so far away
to rehabilitate
that he'll go even to the other extreme. Like, let's say, for example, a person is never addicted to whiskey. He won't even drink at a kiddush. Because if he knows if he takes a little shot glass of whiskey...
Alcoholics have the little trouble getting back. Okay.
Correct. So he has to go to the other extreme. That's called tshuva. Umachrife yonim. Elu shemamrim es hayonim. In other words, the yonim get into a competition, and each owner respectively is gambling, hopefully that he'll win the competition. So what they do is mamrim es hayonim. They do all sorts of actions to get the yonim all riled up so that they'll win the battle, they'll win the challenge. So you see that we're talking about gambling in this price. Not the way the Gemara wanted to suggest that mafriche yonim are stealers, you know, they are thieves that steal yonim from other people. V'lo yonim bilvad amru el afilu behema chayav ha'of. And even in the case of behema chayav ha'of, now the Gemara assumes that these animals that you can use them in a race, but you can't train them to such an extent that they'll be able to tempt other animals to join them and then steal those other animals. The Emesai Chazarosim, how does a person who's a Mafriche Yona go to the other extreme and do tshuva? Mishri Yishbru es pigmehen v'yachzu behen chazara gemura. You remember we spoke about those wooden symbols. You know what a symbol is, right? Which made a noise that incited the pigeons to go faster and faster and faster, and then they would win the race. He has to get rid of these, make a public bonfire and burn. I'm just kidding. And burn these clackers, he calls them. I see. Dafilu b'midbar nami lo avdi, and not only that, he's not even go into the wilderness in order to do so. I see here a number. What number is it? Is it? Does that say 13? Wait a minute. We still have a few minutes.
Rabbi, good morning.
Oh. So what does it mean? Afilu b'midbar nami lo avdi. How does he demonstrate that he's going to the other extreme to reform himself and do tshuva? Even in the wilderness, for the sake of fun, he's not going to have any sort of racing. Okay, so the midbar here is a code word for free races, you know, just for the fun of it, you know, as a game.
How about there's no such thing as free races? In the world today, that they have betting on sports where nobody even comes to watch them.
So, Brian, give me 5 minutes because we're about to start davening, and then we'll talk about your point. I just want to, because otherwise, if we don't get to the punchline here, Sochrei Shvius, the Brisa continues, Elu Shenosim Venosim Beperos Shvius. So they market the fruits of Shvius, which is a violation of the law of Shvius. Again, Bisman has said it's only the Rabbanon. The Emasai Chazarosim, how do they do tshuva? Mishetagia Shvius Acheres, you have to wait another 7 years for the next Shemitah. The Bodlu. And they do not engage in marketing and selling Peros Shvius. However, it's interesting because in this case, they didn't go to the other extreme. They were in the same situation, in the same challenge, but they overcame their desire for money.
That's a rabbah, tshuva gemura.
But I'm not sure at this point why that's called tshuva gemura. Let me just read one more line. V'omer av Nechemia chazoras dvarim bilvad amru, lo chazoras dvarim bilvad amru, ela chazoras mama. Which I think means, if I hope I'm not misleading you. Again, I'm very pressured here to try to get to a certain punchline, so I apologize. So I may not be thinking with a full deck here. Pardon that phrase in the context of gambling. But I think what's going on is that Rav Nechemia is not happy with just the fact that another Shvius came by, and lo and behold, they're not involved in marketing the pair of Shvius. He wants a more extreme demonstration of repentance. The fact that Shemitah comes by another year, you know, another cycle, and he says, I'm not going to sell anything. No, he's got to go beyond that. And what is that? Ketzad Omer Ani Ploni Bar Ploni has to go public. And he speaks to him about himself in third person. Ani, I, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. Ki nasti masayim zuz bepero shvius. I gather together produce of Shvius in order to market it at the price, at the evaluation of 200 zuz. That's a very significant price. And I'm returning it as a gift to the poor people. Meaning again, he received payment for the pair of Shvius. So although he violated an Avera, that money is his. Legally, he owns it. But he is going to do tshuva, and he's going to say to that money, you know, I wronged the Aniyim, I didn't allow them to come into my field and take the produce. Here's 200 zuz for the Aniyim. He dedicates that money to the Aniyim. That, according to Rav Nechemia, is a tshuva gemura because he goes to the other extreme. Okay, now we're getting to the punchline. Ketani mias behema, with regard to the case of mafriche yonim, the Brisa mentioned a behema. Says the Gemara, bishleim elamanti omar itakdeme yonach leon. In other words, if it's gambling because we're racing our pigeons, then hainu to mishkachas le behema. I understand how you can take a behema and you can train that behema to win a race. El Manti Omar Adam Ara, which means that what? That we're talking about stealing someone else's pigeons. Behema bar hachihi? Can you actually take a behema and set it up in such a way that it's going to lure other animals to join up as a, what was the word that we used before? A decoy. Can an animal serve as a decoy? Meaning, there's something about birds, that the nature of birds, you have to study, what's it called, ornithology? Yeah, and figure it out. But the psychology is that birds can be trained as a decoy, but you cannot train an animal as a decoy in. The Gemara says you could train even an animal as a decoy. Bishar Habar. Shar Habar is a wild ox. And this Brisa calls a shor habor a behema. So the word behema could be a reference to a shor habor. This nan, because we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah tells us in Masechta Kelayim, because you have to know that you can't mix a behema with a chaya and so forth and breed them, that shor habor min behemahu, that the status of a shor habor is behema. Whereas Rabbi Yossi disagrees and he says min chaya. But in any event, you can take this wild ox and you can train it as a decoy. And why is that so? So Rashi explains, and you'll see it here summarized in footnote number 18, that a wild ox can be raised in captivity and trained as a decoy.
To decoy
animals of its kind from the wild. Again, Brian will tell you that this goes on all the time in Kruger Park. Okay. Okay. Now, Rabosai, we're going to ask the following question. The Braisa continues and adds Gazlonim here and Chamsonim. They are in violation of a Doraisa. That's not included in our Mishnah. Why did the Braisa feel compelled to add Hosifu Aleim Gazlonim and Chamsonim? These are outright thieves. The Gazlon Doraisahu. And they violated Issa Torah. Now, we've been listing all the psulim derabanan. Why do you have to add a psul doraisa lo nitzcha ela lemitzias cheresh shote v'katan? So we're talking about a gazlan who steals from a cheresh shote v'katan. Cheresh shote v'katan are not considered a bar kinyan. They technically do not have the qualifications to make a kinyan. And if they went ahead and they grabbed something, they picked up something from Hefker, for example, and you steal it from them, then it's considered gezel midivrehem. Why? Because their kinyan of mitzias cheresh shote v'katan, again by virtue of that same Mishnah in Gittin that we referred to, is considered a valid kinyan midrabanan. If you steal from them, then you violate gezel midivrehem and you pasul le edus. So again, this is not a gazlan d'oraisa, but rather a gazlan d'rabanan from cheresh shote v'katan. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, why wasn't this category mentioned earlier? Meikara sovar mitzias cheresh shote v'katan lo shchicha. It's something uncommon. How often is it that a cheresh shote v'katan pick up an object that's hefker and decide to take it for themselves? And if it's not shchiach, then the chacham never made that technical disqualification, that category of a psul derabanan in that case of gzela. Inami b'nei darkei shalom bi'alma, or perhaps the Gemara held that cheresh shote v'katan are not capable of a kinyan even midrabanan, and if it's not even gezel midivrayim, it's only darkei shalom. But kaman dechazu sof sof mamonahu dekashakli, since it became clear to the rabbanan that people are interested in stealing money, and they take it even from a cheresh shote v'katan, paslinu rabbanan, the rabbanan decided to create a psul. Okay, then we'll talk about chamsonim, Yirtz Hashem, on another occasion. We'll stop here.